At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to Board Gamers Anonymous, the podcast about board gamers and the insane fun we have at the table together. This is Chris.
Hey, this is Anthony.
And this is episode 497, Top 100 Games of All Time, number 40 to number 31. We'd like to thank all our Patreon backers for helping us bring you a brand new episode. Hey, friends, of course we're back because we're doing the Top 100. And we're not at number one yet, so it's keep happening. We're rolling down the hill with better and better and better games each and every week.
Yes, according to us on our ranking, which is definitive and you can't argue with it.
Nope.
Board Game Geek is going to update their website when we're done.
It's about time.
You're going to go to Browse Games. It's going to say Browse Games Anthony or Browse Games Chris.
Yeah.
And that's it. That's the page you're getting.
That's what we agreed to with this covenant of 11 years and close to 500 episodes.
Mm-hmm. That's what's happening.
It's a very monkey paw situation. We wanted to be there. We're there. Little do we know it would take us 11 years, 500 episodes.
Right. Yeah. I mean, listen, you'll actually be able to do that. We have a top 100 list on our website that's been up for almost 10 years that I usually update within, I would say, 3 to 4 weeks of us finishing this episode every year. So go check that out when we're done. You can check out the old one right now if you want to compare it to what we're doing. Mm-hmm. But it's thorough, and it has a write-up for every game, and there might even be links to where to buy them and stuff. Like, it's a great way to look at it. No Board Game Geek, but, you know, they'll catch up.
But wasn't it, in fact, like we were number two on Google?
We've been number one several times for top 100 board games, which I find crazy because There was a stretch of time there for about 3 years where we beat Board Game Geek. And it's like 90% of our traffic is that top 100 list. So, hey, go visit it and make it, get it back up there. I mean, it's still up there. It's like the first page, but let's just bump off Board Game Geek again. Let's do it.
Yeah, I mean, let's be fair. Board Game Geek needs the attention. We don't really. So I feel bad now because who are we to knock them down and, you know, make them number 2 or 12 or whatever it might be.
They're doing all right with all their ad revenue. They're fine.
Ah, that's true. Well, I'm happy to report, although we're not there yet, I'm happy to report our own YouTube channel subscriber count. It's up to 922. We've been talking about trying to hit 1,000. Now, we know we're not a YouTube channel, so we're not asking much. We're not expecting much. But considering the tens of thousands of people who are listening and watching this, depending on when that might be, and where it might be 10 years from now. And you'd be like, oh, I remember YouTube was a thing before the aliens and took it over or something like that. But as of now, if you do exist in this time and place of 2024, we would love and enjoy and appreciate if you would be one of the many people that would help add to our subscriber count so we can have a nice round number, because for some reason, round numbers mean a thing. So help us hit 1,000. Help us hand out 1,000. I wish 1,000 games. That'd be nice. We need to get some more Patreon number for that. Can we get some more Patreon number? Just turn that over really quick.
Yeah. We just need like half of you to back us on Patreon.
That'd be amazing. Games. And then we just turn around and give everyone games.
We would totally do that.
100%. My dream, more or less, like since I was a kid, it was like, I just want to be Santa Claus.
Yes.
Like I always wanted, I worked with kids for many years. I have a doctorate in working child development. Like, I just want to make kids happy, and adult kids too. Like, if I could just give kids and people what they really need and want as far as like happiness and ideally tabletop games, that would be amazing. So we don't know if I mentioned it, but of course, thank the Patreons for getting us here to this point. And again, if you'd like to join us on patreon.com/BGA, help me make my dream come true of giving you games. So you give us money, we give you the games back. That's how it works. Like, we're one of those weird non-capitalistic kind of, you know, podcasts that we just don't want the money. We just want to give it back, big back to you, bigger and better.
Right. Yeah. Occasionally my wife's like, what are you doing in there? And I'm like, nothing. Like, we're not giving away all the money.
It's a good time. So yeah, we definitely want to hit the 1,000 because as I mentioned at the end of the last episode, in case you missed it, on episode 500, which is quickly, quickly approaching, we are going to have a live episode of Board Gamers Anonymous on YouTube.
Yeah. Yeah. We're going to broadcast live. I think, yeah, it'll definitely be on YouTube. It might even be on other channels. Ooh. We will confirm that next week. But yes, our fancy software here does allow us to live stream to multiple locations.
Can people chat? Can they do the chat?
That I'm going to confirm for you in the future once we run our test. Which we're
for the future, folks.
Yeah, it's coming. But yeah, we will definitely be live streaming. So you can join us. You can interact. You can like, subscribe, comment, yell at us, whatever you want to do as we finalize our top 10 list. It'll be fun.
Yeah, no. And again, if you happen to be any part introvert, you know how painful this will be for us to actually get out there on the camera.
Yeah, it'll be good, man. It'll be good.
Look, dude, we have a podcast that's called Board Gamers Anonymous. It's there for a reason.
Yeah, you say that, and we're scheduled for like multiple panels at PAX, like 2 months.
I didn't say I wasn't going to be wearing a disguise the whole time.
Oh, okay.
Remember our initial photos for Board Gamers Anonymous where we held the board games in front of our faces?
Yeah,
that's going to be me the entire panel.
Your arms are going to get tired. That's like an hour.
Well, you do what you got to do for the podcast, man.
Oh man, yeah, we got a lot of stuff coming up. Actually, we're going to multiple events. We're going to be get multiple panels over the next few months. So not so anonymous.
No, maybe not. Maybe not anymore. Maybe after 500, all things are different.
Yeah,
and that's something we want to talk to all of you about. You know, BGA is going to hit 500. We've already passed, you know, a decade at this point. So what's next for BGA? What would you like to see or not see? Will there be a future for BGA?
Oh, don't do that to people.
Aw. Well, you know, it's a thing.
Yeah. Unless we're trying to get some fundraising in there. I don't know.
No. I'm just trying to figure things out. It's a weird and wacky world, if you haven't noticed. Look outside your window once in a while, man.
Yeah, I don't want to.
I would not recommend it. So be a good tabletop gamer and keep your head down. Take a look at the cardboard at the table. It's all good, man.
Yeah. Godspeed to everybody.
I know.
South of the Mason-Dixon right now with all the storms.
Everything in the world, in the Middle East especially, but not only there. Just wherever you are individually, in your world, in your people, please stay safe. Please, absolutely, positively join us at the table someday. It would make our day. I mean that like sincerely from the bottom of my heart. So, Anthony, you mentioned that we are doing things that are not so anonymous. There's a little convention coming up in your hometown, Philly, back again.
Yeah, and it sneaks up on me every year because I'm always like, yeah, it's in December. And I'm like, and then I look at the calendar, I'm like, that's 8 weeks from now. Okay, so it's coming up real fast. PAX Unplugged, we are going to be there, obviously. We'll be there all 3 days. I live here, so I'm going to be there as many hours as I can be there.
It's quite convenient that like all these conventions are around you. Origins. Remember Origins?
It was. Yeah.
And it was purposely on your birthday to kind of celebrate you.
I know. Why did they stop doing that?
Because
I moved.
You moved.
I move away from Pittsburgh and they're like, nah, let's change it to a different weekend now.
Now it's for somebody else's birthday.
Oh, okay. Well, then I'm happy. I'm glad for them.
That's right. Good. Somebody out there, they're doing it just for you. And we're really appreciative.
I think it's back on my birthday this next year. We might have to go.
Oh, no. They're trying to get you back.
Yeah.
They heard about the top 100 list. And they're like, this guy's going to hit the top of the Googles. Yeah.
I love me that convention with my birthday and people buy me meals and stuff. It's great. but right now, we're not going to Origins now. We're going to PAX. PAX Unplugged, which is December 6th, 7th, and 8th. And we are presenting multiple panels at the convention this year. So on Saturday, December 7th at 2:30 p.m., we're going to be presenting Engagement, the Secret to Teaching with Board Games. It's going to be myself, Chris, and Will, a friend of the show. He's been on multiple times. And we're going to be talking about not just how to use games in a teaching setting, but literally how to teach games better. Mm. Like,
nuts and bolts,
right? Like, how do we use these teaching skills that we have professionally and collegially to teach games in a more effective way? So that'll be a lot of fun. We've had similar conversations in the past, and it's always been a really great way to engage with the audience. And then Sunday at 4 p.m., we will have a extravaganza panel that Chris will be hosting.
Mega panel.
Role for Inclusion, Empowering Accessible Tabletop Gaming. And this is with everybody, right?
Literally everybody. Everybody who's everybody in the nonprofit accessibility sphere.
Yes. Yeah. So we're going to be joined by, I wish I had the list in front of me, but we'll have
everybody. People. Just everybody. Yeah. you'll have to go to PAX Unplugged. It's everybody. And if they're not on the panel, it's just because we could not physically put any more people on the panel, but those people will still be somewhere in the audience of the panel.
That's true. I'll be down there heckling. So
there you go. PAX really invests into people, to support people, to get more people into tabletop gaming. And inclusion and accessibility is a huge thing for PAX Unplugged. So we're really appreciative of having the opportunity to support their mission and our 11-year mission to get more and more and more people around the table. And we all have challenges with getting to the table. So the first presentation that Anthony mentioned about how to be an excellent, amazing, considerate teacher at the table with the skills and the techniques to be able to teach to anyone. And the accessibility panel is wonderful because when people come to your table, whatever they're bringing to the table, this panel will provide all of the expertise from numerous organizations and experts to give you some competency about how to work with those people at the table and the organizations that can support you with those endeavors. Because again, we need to have everybody at the table. We want everyone to play tabletop gaming. It's a challenge for all of us from time to time. We're having a bad day. We're feeling challenged, whether it's mentally challenged, physically challenged, emotionally challenged, or maybe we're just not spiritually there at the moment. These people are great for kind of helping us zoom in. So we're so lucky to be there. I'll be hosting the panel and I'll just be letting the experts talk and I'll be like, interjecting some kind of fun stuff. So again, we want to hear from all of you out there.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. I'm really excited for it. So we've heard from a lot of people who will be at PAX. And if we haven't heard from you yet, just let us know that you'll be there. Like we're trying to meet up with everybody. And, you know, if you can make it to the panels, amazing. We'll definitely see you there. And we're up there both days, Saturday and Sunday.
Yeah, it's a big thing. PAX is pretty selective of who they take. It's going to be an extra fantastic PAX. They're expanding. And if you have not been to PAX Unplugged before, you should absolutely positively, if it's within your means, please do attend.
Yeah.
Even if it's for a day, it's a lot of fun. They're sharp as all get out as far as conventions are concerned. And it's a good time. And Philly is a great city. I love Philly.
Oh, yeah. No, it's fantastic. Yeah. It's such a nice centrally located place. And now that I've lived here for like 3.5 years, I know where everything is finally. The first couple of years, people were like, where's this and where's this? I'm like, I don't know. I'm never down here. But now I'm down there all the time, so I know where things are.
Yeah, it's good because again, sometimes the conventions close down, or you get there early, or you stay late, or you can't find food, or you can't find hotels or stuff like that. Philly's really great; it has a lot of resources and things around, and the public transportation's great. You're not going to run into a situation where you have to walk 20 minutes in like 300-degree weather.
Yeah,
to someone's lawn to find your car there and then be able to drive another 20 minutes to the hotel.
Well, that's Indiana in August, which is also just like, why are we doing that? Like, if you're gonna insist on having it in August, can we move it to like Nova Scotia? Like,
I'm sincerely waiting for my board games to like explode into flames as I'm,
so
as, I'm
hot.
As I'm walking across the Indiana plains to get back to the hotel.
Never had a comfortable Gen Con. It's always unpleasant.
Yeah. Good place, but yes, it's a
stay
challenge.
Stay inside.
Stay inside, kids. Save a life. Play the game. Stay inside the air conditioning. That's what you really need to do. That's great.
Yep.
All right. So a lot of good stuff coming. Again, appreciate the feedback. Appreciate the online reviews. Appreciate you coming, joining us on Patreon. Appreciate all the social media stuff, of course, and hit us up. We'd love to hear from you. It makes a big difference. All right, Anthony. So we're going to get to our top 100 games, number 40 to number 31. Hopefully everyone's enjoying this different presentation that I think we've done so many different versions of this at this point.
Right.
So we've gone full circle back to, I guess, what's generally the main one. I know one of our friends out there, Scott, is really enjoying this format. And again, if you are, let us know, hit us up. Again, we could do this again. This is fun.
Yeah.
So, Anthony, the new thing, the weird thing, the in thing, do you have a vibe for this list? What is this list? What is this 10 for you?
Yeah, the vibe this week is weird. I don't know. It's, I think the vibe for me this week is games that replaced or built on other games.
Ooh.
So it's, there's some sequels in here. There are some spiritual sequels in here. There are some second editions in here. At least half, maybe more. In fact, I could spin that all of these are that. So, yeah, it's a like a weird mishmash of games that have, some of these literally have replaced other games that used to be in my top 100, and other ones are just like, I came across them and I'm like, oh, this is a new edition of some other game I never played, but it's great. But yeah, it's a lot of that.
That's great. My list, and I looked at it, and sometimes it's hard to get a vibe as far as like, if I had to recommend a top 10, this would certainly be one. Right. Mm. This would certainly be a solid one. I think we've talked about a lot of great games. This collection of games alone. And for me, the vibe here is 100%. These are again, this is not the top 10. This is 40 to 31. But it feels like these are, in some ways, the definitive versions of that particular mechanic.
Mm.
And that's what I'm really excited about this list. More than I think a couple of others, because I think I have really cool things to say about why these games are like, hey, this mechanic, this game owns this mechanic,
right?
Like this is the version of this. There are other versions, but certainly it just cracks at the table. Like there's something fantastic about it.
Right.
All right. So Anthony, of course, let's get onto it. Number 40.
All right. Number 40 for me was your number 74. I mentioned I would talk about it more later, and I'm doing that now. Through the Ages, a new story of civilization.
Not an old story.
No, the new one.
Which is ironic, because it really is about ancient stuff.
I know, yeah. It's a brand new story about stuff that happened thousands of years ago.
It's a new old story of civilization.
That's pretty much what the title is, yeah.
A long time ago in a galaxy far, far away?
Yeah. Albert Einstein and Napoleon walk into a bar.
That's right.
So this is the ultimate Civ game. Like, I love me a Civ game. I have a few on my list, but this is, like, the granddaddy, biggest, most sprawling, most interesting version of that. Unless you want miniatures on the board, which this does not have. This is purely a card-based game. It's Vlada Shivadal, so you know that it's not only extremely well-designed and has a lot of intricacies in terms of mechanics, but it's also a little funny. It's also a little quirky.
Yeah.
It's also got some interesting things that kind of deviate from those tight mechanics intentionally, because Shivadal is such a genius designer.
Mm-hmm.
There's something about building up that little personal Civ board, like where you are placing out those cards and you're getting your, you know, building up your army and you're having your own little personal leader there, and that's one of my favorite things about a Civ game, right? It's like those things that make it unique to you and that you're constantly cycling through. The military element of it, I can kind of get taken or not taken by a Civ game based on how the military is integrated, but I think this game does a really good job of that. The major thing that I have with this game that makes it difficult is that it's hard to get it to the table. It takes a long time to teach it. It takes a while to set it up because of all the different decks of cards. And it is long, right? If you play with a full player account, this can take a long, long time. Similar to a lot of Shivadal's games, which, like Mage Knight, another one I'll talk about later, it's a brilliant, brilliant game, but it says 1 to 4 players, which is crazy talk,
yeah.
Right? Through the Ages, it's not quite that crazy, but close to it. It's like a 6-hour game you play with 4 players.
Sure.
And so the reason I really fell in love with this game is because of the app, which is one of the best, most interesting board game apps I've ever played, with one of the funniest tutorials I've ever played in a video game. Just really clever and interesting and unique. And it really captures the spirit of the game. And then going back and playing it on the table, I'm like, yep, that's what I thought, right? So I do still play it on the table when I want something more methodical and slower, and I don't want the game to kind of move the things for me. Through the Ages, yeah, it's, I will say it's not my number, it's not my top ranked Civ game. There's still one more to come, but it's very close. And in terms of complexity, it's my favorite that does it at this level, with the amount of different things, the amount of different ways that things can interact with each other, the amount of stuff you need to keep in your head and balance and manage. Through the Ages, a new story of civilization.
It's a brilliant pick. It's I think we should also mention this was a new iteration of it, right? There was a previous version of this that also sits somewhere on in Board Game Geek's top something or another.
Yeah, they're weird, stupid system. They have both of these games in the top 100. I never played the first edition. I discovered this game after the second edition came out, but I'm sure it was still good.
I'm sure it was still
good. This is just more streamlined, which is great.
And the expansion's very good, too.
Yes, expansion is very good.
Just get the expansion with it. Don't even think about it. It gives you a really good wealth of new leaders. And it's such a great game. And you mentioned the app. To this day, I'm really trying hard here. No, I can't. To this day, the best board game app out there.
Is, yeah,
totally. Right? Like, there's other apps out there. There's newer apps. And again, technology makes things better, especially when it comes to apps. But, like, still the best app out there.
Yeah, like, Direwolf does some good apps.
They do.
Dune Imperium is very good. Root is very good. But this one is it's not just good. It's not just a good implementation. It's funny and quirky in the way that you feel playing the board game, but different because it's a video game. Like, it's so good.
And certainly it's a heavier lift.
Yeah.
All right. My number 40 is my favorite Mind Clash game. This is Tricarion, the Collector's Edition from 2019. There's a lot of, you know, typically I kind of mentioned like there is an earlier version of this, but the Collector's Edition gives you some additional expansions that come in the main box that are essential for gameplay. So we could have a long conversation about what versions of what things and how publishers could really help people. Tricarion's an amazing game for so many reasons. It's a medium to heavyweight Euro game, and it tackles one of the really fun errors of, you know, culture in the Victorian era, which is the magician, right? This almost steampunky, in some cases, actual steampunky magicians and apprentices coming along to create all of these typically real modern kind of tricks and illusions, utilizing really brilliant worker placement actions. What's really great about this worker placement actions is the power of the different assistants or yourself that goes out to the board, and the power that you bring to that board, whether it's like somebody low level or high level. It's not just like I'm putting the meeple out there and I get a thing. Like, no, what meeple are you putting out there? And do they have the ability to actually utilize that space or empower that space? Can you power them up to use that space? In addition to that, the Academy expansion is essential to this game. I played the regular version. I love the regular version, but it's a shadow with the Academy expansion. Because basically what you're doing is you're creating tricks, and then you're building the tricks together, and then you're going on stage and you're performing the tricks to the audience. So there's a whole performance aspect as well. And depending on which days you perform the tricks, there's different benefits or losses as far as that's concerned. But throughout, those tricks become old and dated. Now with the Academy expansion, not only do you get new students and new apprentices, but you're also able to take those tricks back and teach them. So like other younger upstarts can actually learn those tricks. Such a fun idea, such a thematic mechanic to allow things that you've built earlier, not just to sit foul. You can actually utilize them in a real positive way, and not just, oh, I did a thing and it's blocking up a spot and I can't use it anymore. No, you could do a thing with it. Fantastic production. This is my favorite. And again, this is hard to say because Mind Clash does so many great games. Tricarion, Collector's Edition.
I really like Tricarion a lot. Like, I remember I learned it at your place. You taught it to me. And it's such a fun, clever game. And like, there's an RPG for it now too, because like the lore is so interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I really, really wanted to like this to the point that I backed the collector's edition.
Yeah.
And I had it for a long time. And I eventually got rid of it, not because I didn't like the game, but because it just wasn't getting played.
Sure.
And it's incredibly highly in demand.
Yes.
So I was like, I could sell this for like $300. I'm going to sell this for like $300. And if I really want to play this, I'll find somebody who has it, including
poof,
Chris.
Poof.
Yeah. Yeah. It was gone now. But it's a wonderful game. It's fantastic. Yeah. It's my second favorite Mineclash game. Mm,
gotcha.
All right. Number 39 for me, another second edition, because like I said, that's my that's what we're doing this week. This is a game that I actually did not like the first time I played it, the first edition. It actually deeply disliked it. I think I came on the podcast and reviewed it and gave it like at least a dodge, maybe worse. Part of that was the teach. Part of it, though, is just how fiddly and messy the game was.
Sure.
And I know some people liked that, but I was like, this is just such a mess.
Yeah.
Eclipse, Second Dawn for the Galaxy, which is the second edition of Eclipse, New Dawn for the Galaxy, which I love that I have two games in a row here that are like a new story, Second Dawn. This was not intentional, by the way. It's just how they fell down. And
sure.
So it's designed by Toko Takualio. Probably saying that wrong. And it is a 4X Euro. It's you know, like a more Euro-y version of like a Twilight Imperium kind of game. Where you are going out into space and completing these different objectives and building up your fleet and interacting with all these other players on this sprawling hex-based map with all these little bits and bobs everywhere. It's like you look at a picture of it and how busy that is. Yeah, that's about right. That's what the game feels like.
Yeah.
The first edition of the game was a mess.
Yeah.
Like, not mechanically. Mechanically, I'm sure it was fairly similar, but like, it just, there was stuff everywhere. The pieces would move all over your board. Like, it just wasn't designed physically to do the things it was doing. And it was too long. And the expansions, there were so many of them, they just kind of dumped content on top of it. So, Second Dawn for the Galaxy, I did not back this. I was not interested in it. But I played it at a friend's house when I visited them in Pittsburgh a couple of years ago. And I was like, oh, this is actually pretty good. This game actually works pretty well. Like, not only have they fixed the issue with like things like player boards, and now you have like your little personal tray that they designed, which is fantastic, by the way, to keep track of all your stuff. One of the better game tray implementations that I've seen.
100%.
But also they've streamlined in all of that expansion content where everything kind of flows together now. It doesn't feel like stuff is tacked on. It doesn't feel like the game's going to drag on for hours. I've played this game, you know, a dozen times at this point. I don't think any of those games went past 4 hours, which the first time I played it was like, we stopped at 4.5 hours because we weren't going to finish and the place we were at was closing. And, you know, it's sometimes even shorter than that, like 2-3 players. It just really, it flies. And that's not a reason to like a game, but it doesn't feel like I play Twilight Imperium. I know it's going to be 10 hours. It feels like it should be 10 hours. It has an epic feel to it. Eclipse is similarly epic, but it doesn't feel like it should take 10 hours to play, right? And it felt loose. This feels much tighter and more interesting and engaging. And like the way you build out the technology on your ship and you upgrade these different things, you have like your own little personal ships and you gain these abilities that allow you to go out and do things like, it feels like you're in charge of this fleet that you're managing in a way that other 4X games don't, right? They give you ships, they have stats, maybe you get upgrades, but in this way, you're like really personalizing and upgrading and building things out. And yeah, there's combat and yeah, there's interaction, but really it's more of a Euro, right? Like it's an interactive Euro, but it is a Euro game. And for me, especially, that's amazing. So I fell in love with this game. Those couple plays I had in Pittsburgh, and then you and I, Chris, we played it when I came back, your copy, and I was like, this is great. I since have picked up a copy and I played it a bunch more times. So Eclipse, Second Dawn for the Galaxy. Like, it's always worth giving a game a second try, because it's, again, I really hated it the first time.
Yeah, what's interesting about Eclipse, especially the Second Dawn for the Galaxy, is TI4 kind of owned the space.
Yeah.
So when you think about your epic science fiction opera, you know, it's just TI4 is just the only answer, period. You don't bother getting involved in anything else. And with the second edition here, the Second Dawn for the Galaxy, it really does earn its place. And like you said, it had all the really positive elements there, and it was able to streamline things in a really meaningful way, just like TI-4 did. TI-4 mm-hmm. was somewhat of a wide, clumsy mess too, and TI-4 did a great job.
Yep.
And then again, you're like, but we don't need Eclipse now. We don't need a second edition of this. And I think it did. I do think it went silent for a lot of people.
Yeah.
And then, like you said, when it got out there, it's like, no, this earns its own spot. It's not either or. It's like, it can be both.
Yeah. Yeah. I have both. I'm happy to own both. I think they have spots. Yeah.
And I will always play either one. Like, I, if someone said, like, which one do you want to play? I'm like, I don't care. They're both good.
Yeah. It's really, how much time do we have?
Yes.
Like, I would always prefer Twilight Imperium if we have the time for it, but you never have the time for it.
Mm.
So if someone's like, oh, we have 4 hours, I'm like, all right, we'll play Eclipse.
Well, we'll do the other thing, which is, again, is a little more Euro-y. You mentioned the trays, which is fantastic. They did a really good
job
what could have been a nightmare. And then pulling all those special abilities onto your board. Ah, beautiful. Just so much fun. It really is. It's really a good time. And then obviously the more players you play, the more interactions you have. But again, there could be different things that take place, whereas TI-4 has some of its own challenges as far as, like, you know, running away leader kind of thing.
Yeah, TI-4 has a lot of issues in that regard. It's really hard to teach. Everybody needs to be prepared. Yes. You need the time. If someone falls behind early, they can get cranky and you're stuck with them for 8 hours.
Yes, that has happened.
we've retired this game. We're not going to talk about it on this list.
Yes.
But it is amazing, I will say. And it does fall, like what you said, is basically like these two games are in the same bucket.
Yeah.
And for me personally, it just comes down to how much time do we have?
Sure.
Like, I have a friend right now who's trying to get a TI-4 game together. I'm like, cool. But if we can't quite do it, I have Eclipse. We could just play Eclipse. Literally had this conversation like a week ago.
It's 100% apples and oranges, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep, totally.
All right. Well, next up on my list, I talked about this list being very definitive as far as mechanics are concerned. I talked about Suburbia, where the worker placement, as far as the power of the worker, the energy that's required to activate certain spots, gives worker placement a beautiful additional kind of mechanic and weight to it that most games don't have. The other really kind of central, essential kind of addition for worker placement is Caverna, the Cave Farmers, by our good friend Uwe Rosenberg. Caverna does Agricola in a much more meaningful way when it comes to the worker placement aspect. Where Agricola, it's very much about, dear God, will I starve this winter? And I have to get that one spot before someone else takes it. Like, that kind of misery farming, like do or die kind of thing, has its own place. But Caverna gives you a wide berth, a number of different rooms to build, a number of different, you know, like ways to kind of build up your land, have animals out there, living their best life. You know, carving through the mountain, doing that kind of thing, exploring out to other lands to bring back resources and goods. Like, it gives you so many different opportunities to just build and produce a beautiful game. You can win this game with just two workers. Like, typically when you play any worker placement game, the rule is get more workers. Like, it doesn't matter what worker placement game you play, with the exception of Caverna. Every other worker placement game, you must get more workers. That has to be the way you play. I don't care if it's a brand new game or an old game, get more workers. More workers or more actions. Caverna kind of understands that. So they make two workers actually play so well that you can win. Now, obviously, if other people do other things, a little more challenging, of course, but two workers can win. But you don't have to go that route. You can go a full-fledged family out there with a lot of family members doing a lot of different actions. And all of the actions in this game are going to allow you to get resources and score points and build your own engine. It's not a rail like a lot of other games out there where you have to pull, you know, cover all the negative victory points, or you have to build, you know, enough of every little thing in order to score points. Caverna allows you to really play in the sandbox in a meaningful way with your workers to do what you want, how you want to do it. And it's just a fun, fun game. Everything's out there. Everything's accessible. Caverna, the Cave Farmers, back in 2013.
Yeah, I love me some Caverna. This was my number 54. Talked about it 2 weeks ago. And I think, like, I love what you said there about, like, the workers and not having to get more. Like, most worker placement games, like you're saying, there is a very obvious best path for the first half of the game. Mm-hmm. Like whatever the path is to get more workers, that is the best path. And that's fine. That's the game. But then it makes it a little boring. You play it over and over again. It's the same thing. This one, it does feel sandbox. You can kind of go whatever way you want. And I've won this game doing pretty much everything.
Sure.
Like I've grown vegetables. I've raised animals. I've filled my mine with donkeys. I've done.
Yeah.
I have a big pile of rubies. Like I've won all these different ways.
Yeah.
And that's cool. That makes a really good game. So totally love this one.
Yeah. It's a complete opposite of another great game, which is Russian Railroads, but.
Yeah, that's true.
Not on rails. It lets you do your own thing, which
yes,
is appreciated.
Yes, yes. I do love the rails as well, though.
I do love the rails, too. I'm a rail guy. I'm on board.
We're going to talk about that at some point.
Maybe, possibly. You never know.
Definitely. all right. So let's move on to number 38. Number 38 for me is not officially a sequel, but it is like an iteration of a thing that we had seen a lot in the couple of years before.
It was the talk.
And it was the... to this day, it's the best iteration of this formula.
Yeah.
The fact that no one's copied this yet, I'm like, what are we doing? This is the best way to do it. it's Underwater Cities from 2018. Vladimir Suchy's, his build up your tableau of cards and build a thing game, right? It's Terraforming Mars, but underwater. It's Wingspan, but underwater. However you want to think of it, right? There's a lot of these games now, Earth, etc. But the thing that all those other games have that Underwater Cities fixes is giant piles of cards, right? Huge, enormous decks that are really impossible to build synergy through without some amount of luck, right? Underwater Cities breaks down this deck into three distinct eras, and those decks are not that big, right? Maybe 100 cards in each of them, to the point where you're going to see a lot of different types of cards. You're going to be able to build your deck in different ways. You can draw from different places. Scoring cards come from a different location based on an action that you take. It has a worker placement component to the game where you will be putting out your workers around the board and playing a card together, which is another thing that we see a lot of, and that ensures that you always are able to get something on your turn, right? It's not just based on whatever cards you drew and being able to play those cards. You're also able to go to the board and take these different actions and, you know, build labs or build new cities or build routes between the cities, roads or whatever. There's always options for what you can do. And the result is, no matter what path you take, you're always going to build up your city to some degree, and it's going to look great. It's one of the best tableau building type of games out there, period. And it's one that I can continue to revisit over and over again and always get something different out of. It is one of the rare games kind of in this bucket, especially in my top 100 at least, where I would consider the expansion, if they sold the boards separately, it would not be essential at all. It's an expensive expansion because it has all this stuff in there, but the actual expansion stuff, like where you're building the museum and going out, like all that other stuff, don't need any of that. I don't think it's very interesting. It makes the game longer, but you get variable player boards that are in set. So like the base game comes with like the flat mats and things slide over all over the place. That makes the game better in a lot of ways as well. So it's, you know, if I love Terraforming Mars, Wingspan's great, Wormspan's great. This game does that particular mechanic where you're drawing cards from a large deck and building a tableau and trying to create synergy with your own cards in a way that none of those do quite as well, because they can't, right? I would love to see more games have this really curated experience with different decks and different ages and different eras, or however you want to do it. Civ games do it too, right? We talk about Through the Ages. We talk about these other games where you have multiple decks based on like the period of the game that you're in. You kind of have to, otherwise things just get all cluttered and messy. So, Underwater Cities, great, great game.
I will be talking about this on a later episode.
Ooh.
There's the thing. All right, Anthony, well, you talked about what Underwater Cities was able to do because they wisely broke up developments by error, right? That it made sense that certain things scaffold on top of each other throughout. Mm-hmm. So, when we're talking about great games and getting things to the table, one of the great games that does this so very well is one of my favorite games of all time, Seven Wonders, Second Edition. Obviously, it's civilization building, and that civilization building brings something new and innovative to the table. I've loved and talked endless numbers of hours about the first edition. I've talked about how I own all the stuff for the first edition, more or less, even down to the fancy coins and the really super heavy wood insert. And I honestly never thought that I would be the person that would buy the second edition of Seven Wonders. I felt like I had everything I needed. I love the expansions with it. Seven Wonders, again, one of the definitive mechanics is the card drafting. And it's still found in the second edition, but the cards are more streamlined. The final bonus big guild cards at the end of the game are better. The board actions are better. So again, if you want to kind of give someone a definitive, you know, talk about the definitive drafting, it's going to be Seven Wonders. And the fact that it breaks it down to the three different eras, the three different ages, so that you can see your civilization being built up on a tableau in front of you. You have this beautiful wonder board that's going to give you special abilities, opportunities to tuck cards to build up that wonder. And it's also going to give you opportunities for science and culture and technology and military, and then, you know, just building up your money and your bank and your special abilities. And it's quick. It's streamlined. It takes probably one play to get through to learn how the kind of the drafting mechanic works. But once you get down, you could sit down, play a very quick civilization game at the table. It's a game that I always come back to. I always play. I play it online all the time, still to this day. I enjoy it a great deal. I'll talk about another civilization game that's a little bit higher on my list. But again, one of the civilization games that's always like the civilization game when it comes to the card drafting, the tableau building, and just the streamlined aspects to it is Seven of Wonders, the second edition.
Seven Wonders is great, man. It's a great game. Play that anytime. All right. Next up for me, number 37. And this is a brand new game, obviously, that we've only had for like a month. The reason it's this high is that I previously had the first iteration of this formula, Dwellings of Eldervale, on my list. And so I still like that formula. And now we have Andromeda's Edge, which is that formula, but in space and with some more stuff thrown in the box. And by some stuff, I mean a bunch more stuff thrown in the box.
A bunch more stuff.
Yeah. So much more stuff.
Tracks, man. Tracks.
Tracks on tracks on tracks. it's a worker placement game, right? At the end of the day. But you have like different types of workers. And they're going to go out and they're going to take different actions based on where they are. In this case, they're ships. And you're going to, you know, they have a base level of activity, things they can do. But you can also upgrade them over the course of the game. With these different abilities, you can get like a special faction only ship. You have special faction abilities. The base ships that go out, you can build on. You can build buildings out on these planets. You are interacting with all of these different things. Like, so you have locations that you're going to go and take actions that are going to let you do a bunch of stuff. So you're going to buy these different upgrade tiles. And forgive me because I can't remember all the terminology. Science, what is it? Science, industry, commerce, civilization. Those are the four types of tracks that you can go up.
Military,
and
tile. Yeah.
And the military, right?
Yeah.
And so you buy these tiles and they give you different abilities that you will be able to take with your workers when you take them back off the map. It's just cool. It's got all these different things baked into it that remind me of all the different things I like about different types of worker placement games. But then it throws in some of those elements of, it's not a 4X game at all, but it gives the theme of one, right? Which I love. I like the theme of a 4X game can be just as much fun, if not more so, than a 4X game if you're just, you want to play something that feels like that, right? So yeah, there's combat, but it doesn't really hurt to lose in combat. You know, there's these enemy ships that kind of follow you around the map that you have to deal with, and you get benefits if you defeat them, but if you lose, it's not the end of the world, right? You do lose an action down the line, but you also sometimes get benefits, and depending on your faction, it might be fine. It's a great, great game that does so many interesting things. And I love Dwellings of Eldervale. And the reason, like, I had taken it off my list this year initially because I just was never able to find a copy. Have not played it since it initially came out. This one finally came in, got a chance to play it. Chris was generous enough to come down and teach it to me. and it became, like, instantly, I was like, oh, no, I still love this. This is still fantastic. Mm-hmm. And if anything, I like it more with this kind of, you know, sci-fi chic thrown on top of it. And like you said, it has the tracks in there. So similar to what Gaia Project did on top of Terra Mystica, you're going up these different tracks based on actions you take in different places. There's an event deck that can be good or bad or somewhere in between, depending on what version of the game you want to play. There's a lot of different modules and different things you can throw in there. But the base game by itself, it's just, it's clever, it's tight, it looks, it honestly, the amount of time it takes to set up and organize everything makes it seem messier than it is. Like, and I don't know how you fix that, but when you get down and sit down to play the game, it's actually pretty straightforward. So Andromeda's Edge is great, and I'm glad that I like it as much still as I like Dwellings, because it was expensive and it's a big, big box. It's a big, stupid box.
Well, Andromeda's Edge is higher on my list, so I'll talk about it later.
All right.
My number 37 is, I'm sure, one of Anthony's favorite games and one of Anthony's favorite places. It's Seattle. But in fact, Rebuilding Seattle. This was a game that immediately captured my attention when we first got a chance to demo it, way back in 2023, give or take. And I was just like, oh no, this is good. This is so good. And it has a lot of elements to that I just generally would, you know, kind of just like blow off a little bit. So you have your polyominoes, yeah, and your polyominoes play a very interesting role in your rebuilding of Seattle. So after the Great Fire of 1889, where most of the iconic downtown Seattle's burned down, you, as a city planner, love that idea, are tasked with rebuilding it. And you start off with a simple little neighborhood with a couple of landmarks on it. So you have some parks, you have some waters, you have some trees and things like that. And then you also have some starting business areas. So the idea that this city has been crippled by this fire, but there's still some businesses and government facilities that are going to rebuild this out. So on this tableau, you're just growing and growing and growing, and you see Seattle rebuilding like right in front of your eyes. So you have an opportunity to utilize your cash, to utilize your special ability board that has an opportunity to take a vote that gives you a special ability and allows you to use special tiles that kind of get given to you at the beginning. It's like these landmarks. But what's really key here is the selection of, are you bringing in food and services? Are you bringing entertainment? Are you bringing commerce in? And then how do you build up this neighborhood once again to be a grand city? And as you add neighborhood boards, as you add buildings, you're kind of managing the different shapes of structures. They are covering some of the natural beauty of Seattle, which again, you're losing some points, but you're also benefiting by keeping some of those beautiful natural resources up and available for everybody. And then as you're putting the cards into play, you're giving yourself an opportunity to continue to score. You could build certain paths to victory, like maybe Seattle's going to be a university town, or maybe Seattle's going to be all about their airports, right? Like rethinking, reimagining Seattle under your tutelage and utilizing these polyominoes in such a smart, fun, brilliant way, right down to the landmarks. It's such a great experience. Rebuilding Seattle 2023. Love it.
Yeah, it's great, man. I talked about this last week. It was my number 42. I love that we ended up more or less in the same spot with this one.
Mm-hmm.
I was attracted to it because of the name, and it turned out the game itself was fantastic. And they're actually re-implementing this with new cities, which is very cool as well.
That's very cool. I was actually at a game night today, and someone randomly said, because I taught the game, they were like, I really want to play Rebuilding Seattle again. And I'm just like, that's so cool.
Yeah.
I will bring that back out.
It teaches so fast, and it's a short game, which is great.
Which is surprising, because you see what you're able to develop, and you're like, I built a wonderful, amazing tableau. Yeah. And you're like, that was not hard to do at all. Perfect sense.
I love these games that are like sub 90 minutes, but have a lot of interesting decisions.
Mm-hmm. Very much so.
At Kroger Pharmacy, Care is making it easy to get vaccinated. Care is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours.
Care is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
So, speaking of that, my number 36 is, say it together now, Blood Rage.
Blood Rage.
Blood Rage. this is a re-implementation of a formula that Eric Lang, the designer, has been iterating on for, at this point now, like 15 years. Now, it's officially a re-implementation of Midgard, which is a game from 2007, but also Chaos of the Old World has some elements, too, that he drew from. So just again, following that theme this week for my games, it is a worker, not a worker placement game. It's a dudes on a map game. And I historically didn't really like this type of game because they often tended to be more area control focused. You put dudes on the map, you fight each other, you lose your dudes on the map, you lose your ability to do stuff. Right. So, which can be fun if done right, but often can be not fun. And Eric Lang has really mastered the ability of making a game like this where it doesn't matter if you lose because you're still able to do something interesting. So it is a dudes on the map game, but it's also a drafting game where you are building up your hands of cards and the tableau that you have in front of you based on potential different synergies from the gods that you pull and the different abilities that you can get. So maybe you get the Loki strategy, which, yeah, it's broken, but it's cool. It's still fun to do, where you can just kill all your guys off and make points that way. Maybe you have a more of a glory focused strategy where you go in and you're trying to destroy as much as you can and you just really power things up. Maybe you want more monsters on the map. Like, you're building up your own synergies and your own deck and then determining how you're going to go. And the game is telling you from the start, things are going to die, right? Wherever you go on this map, and it's going to get smaller every round. Like, you get those three rounds and the map keeps shrinking as things get blown up from Ragnarok coming in. And it's just such a fun experience. Like, sometimes in this type of game, I'll hide in a corner and be like, maybe I can turtle over here. Maybe no one will mess with me. It'll be fine. I can do my own little thing. But this is not Scythe. You can't just ignore people. You got to go out there. You got to fight. And it pulls you in and you feel that. And it's not stressful somehow. Now, is it broken? Yeah, it is a broken game in a lot of ways, but in a fun way. Like,
it's meant to be broken. Yeah.
It's meant to be broken, right? It's not meant to be like this balanced competitive thing. I have played games where I beat people by like 200 plus points. and that probably sucks for them, but yeah. I've also lost by like 150, 200 points. It's fine because that's just the way the game goes. Like, you aim for a strategy, people can hate draft around you. Maybe you just don't get the cards you need. You're not going to do what you want to do. It happens. But it's short. It's fun. Everybody's actions are interesting to watch. And it doesn't, like, there's a bunch of expansion stuff that came out mostly through Kickstarter stuff, but you don't really need any of it. It just adds more variety to the table. Blood Rage, man, there's been a few of these now. Like, I famously am like not a huge fan of Rising Sun. Ankh is fine, but Blood Rage is still like prominent place on my shelf. Love Blood Rage.
Well, I will rage on a later episode,
man. You got my whole list next week.
All right, a game that I loved and enjoyed way back when. It's my number 36. This is Rococo from 2013, although the new updated deluxe edition Rococo from 2020 is also excellent. Both by Matthias Kramer, Stefan Malls, Lewis Malls. The deluxe edition has the one and only Ian O'Toole on Rococo. But the original version from 2013 has Michael Menzel, who he's keeping his own. Like, I love Ian O'Toole, but Michael Menzel, like, he comes to play. Rococo. If you don't know anything about Rococo, it's the age of Rococo. It's the age of opulence. It's the age of lavish balls and fancy clothing and amazing fireworks and decorations and beautiful, beautiful deck building. This is one of those games that, from a thematic point of view, pass. But when I played it, the deck building in this game is so smart and innovative. Earlier, Anthony talked about some really great deck building games and some really good hand management games. What I love here with Rococo, again, has some of the best multi-use cards. And also, when you're actually able to play the cards from your hand and play them out, whatever cards you have left, you're going to play them. So it allows that opportunity for you really to kind of focus in as you're building your deck. Like, there's something next level with it. Usually when you play a deck builder, like, you gain cards into your hand and then you get rid of cards of your hand. And like, you gain new cards and you discard cards and you try to wean your deck out to be low. Rococo is all about being able to utilize all the different craftspeople, artisans, royalty that come into play to be able to create wonderful, beautiful, typically dresses and dress coats. Again, a theme I never thought I'd be into, but now when I have the opportunity to get a great game to the table, when I want to show off a little bit, it's Rococo. And I'm like, bro, Rococo. And they're like, bro? And I'm like, bro, Rococo. It's just a beautiful game in the deck building, the card playing, pulling together the different fine threads and fabrics to make the dresses for women, the dress coats for men. And then there's a really cool element as far as the area control on the actual board itself. There's a lot of ways to score points. There's a lot of activations that happen, a lot of special abilities that will benefit you throughout the game. Just a really fun game. Whatever version you get, it's great. It's Rococo. Again, multi-use cards, card drafting, deck building, area control on the board, and just a beautiful building up and utilization of all the great thematic play from Matthias Kramer, Stefan Malls, and Lewis Malls.
I love the theme of this game. Yeah. Like, I think it's like, this is one of the games I point to, and I'm like, we need more diverse, interesting things. If we're going to go, you know, back in time and look at the Renaissance or the Age of Enlightenment or any of those things, like, let's get themes that are more domestic or more interesting or more engaging than just like, get on a boat and go steal stuff from some people. Like, that's all these games in this time period.
Almost like that was a problem.
Yeah. Now, like, if you think about it, the stuff that they're making here probably was also stolen. Oh, but sure. Whatever. We can't disown the entire society.
No, not so much.
But yeah, it's great. I love this.
Yeah, and especially with the deluxe edition, it really does bring different designs and different artisans from around the world. And the box, the production is like crazy. It's Eagle Griffin EN02 production level, which is just, it's like a Lacerda version. You're just like,
yeah, wow, I know, yeah.
Why? So
fancy.
Fancy, super fancy. Well, same fancy components in it.
Yeah. All right. Next up for me, number 35. This, as recently as a week ago, this was a different game.
Oh, man.
Yeah. And it is the same game, technically, but it's a new version of it. So this is The Lord of the Rings Duel for Middle Earth, which is a reimplementation of Seven Wonders Duel. Seven Wonders Duel was sitting at number 35 on my list when I made the list. Mm-hmm. So I got in Lord of the Rings Duel for Middle Earth about a week ago and have played it several times. And you know, if this was just like a brand new game based on no particular mechanics, I wouldn't be able to that quickly say it's in my top 100. Like, that would be really fast. But it is Seven Wonders Duel with the Lord of the Rings theme, with the new artwork from Vincent Dutroux. And it really just, it's just my favorite version of this now.
Wow.
So I'm not going to remove Seven Wonders Duel from the list. I'm just going to replace it with the better version to me.
I see a theme.
That's what I've done.
It's a bit of a vibe there.
Right. So, this is designed by Antoine Bauza and Bruno Cathala, same guys who did Seven Wonders Duel. And it is the same basic mechanics, right? You're going to lay out the cards over three different rounds in a tableau in the center, and you're going to draft them taking turns. So if you played Seven Wonders Duel, it's the same layout of cards. Where the game differs the most is it streamlines a lot of stuff. Right. So there are multiple ways to win still, or multiple ways to work towards winning, I should say. But in the original Seven Wonders duel, it was like this mishmash of you can get points, but if you complete any of these other objectives first, that's how you win. It's still technically like that, except now there's no points. They've replaced the points with these the track to move the ring. So there's this very cool track, the slide track at the bottom of the board, where the hobbits are trying to move the ring to Mount Doom, to Mount Doom. And then you have the ring race chasing them. If the hobbits make it destroy the ring, they win the game. If the ring race catch the hobbits, they win the game. You can never move backwards. So every time you gain a ring card, which is like a card of Gollum with ring symbol, you move forward on this track. So you really have to be careful. Like you have to hate draft these cards. Like before, like the point cards were almost throwaway cards.
Yes.
That you could just ignore. You're like, I'm not doing points, it's fine. You can grab those point cards, whatever. I'm gonna go for military, it's fine. Now if you just ignore those cards, you're gonna lose the game every time because your opponent's just gonna catch up to you, or you're gonna make it away. Like, depends on which side you're on. So that's a really cool mechanic. The other thing is the game, if it doesn't end from that, or the replacement to the technology tokens, which is these like affinity tokens with the different races of Middle Earth, then you go to the board, and the board is area control to an effect, like whoever controls the most of these cities on the map. You can place out permanent installations on different cities based on these tiles that you can take in, which are effectively the wonder cards, but now they allow you to affect the main board. Or you can put out individual fighters to different locations. And so you're trying to manage that. And if at any point you have presence in all the cities on the map, then you win the game that way too. That's the military victory. So it streamlines a lot of stuff, right? You don't have to worry about like how much does it cost to buy this resource. Every resource you don't have costs one. That's very simple now. It gets rid of the point mechanism, which is always the most boring way to win the game, because it just means you got to the end of the game and nothing happened.
Yes.
It adds a really cool chase mechanic in place of the military track. And I love the military track in Seven Wonders Duel. But I think this is more, it's thematic and it fits the theme really well. The artwork's really nice. It has all the feel that I loved from Seven Wonders Duel, but thematic to Lord of the Rings and with some streamlining of other mechanics. So it's still my favorite two-player game, and now, or small box two-player game, I should say. And now it's got a new cool theme on it. So I'm loving this.
Excellent. I have not played this. I'm really jealous that you got to play this.
Yeah. Well, next time we see each other, we'll play. Still a 30-minute game. So it's great.
I try to pick it up and it like literally vanished in front of my eyes. I think someone,
it is hard to find right now.
Yeah. I mean, it's a beautiful production, not just the artwork, but actually the little pieces are really nice to have on the board. And I'm really excited about getting this to the table because I do like Lord of the Rings and I do like streamlining, and I do like that your list is very streamlined. It's a very streamlined list.
Yeah. Get rid of the chaff. Just the best version of every game.
It's true. All right. this is a streamlined version, but as you mentioned previously, I think this is relatively a very much a refined version. This is Kemet. Blood and Sand from 2021. This is, in a lot of ways, somewhat of the definitive troops on the map kind of action, where troops on the map, as you were talking about Blood Rage before, Anthony, like, you can't turtle. You can't stay in your corner. Like, there are troops on the map because they're there to fight. And they're there to fight in the most crazy, somewhat realistic ancient Egypt, and then of course gods and monsters are kind of thrown in there too. I really have enjoyed and loved Kemet, the original version, with its multiple expansions that came out, but then again it became like unwieldy. It was just too much. It was trying to do too many different things and it just was not working at some point. And the production wasn't up to snuff. Kemet Blood and Sand that came out in 2021, the Kickstarter that came out, just, it streamlines all of the expansions into the actual base game and allows you to utilize some really interesting smart mechanics at the table, because basically what you're doing is you have your own particular action board and you're able to choose actions from that board that allow you to do a number of different things on the map. So all of your movements, your attacking, your prayers, things like that come into play, But really where this game stands out and what makes it more than just plastic miniatures on a board, you know, taking swipes at each other, is those actual tiles. Those tiles are the game. And with Kemet Blood and Sand, they expand to another color that you can actually bring to the table. And by being able to select these different tiles to add to your own tableau and utilizing their special abilities, whether they may be attack or defense or prayers or special abilities or monsters or victory points that you get into the game, allows the game to really open up in an almost endless numbers of strategies. Recently, they had another crowdfunding campaign, which adds even more to the game, including the giant gods that come into play. So it plays a lot more like Ankh in that way. It gives you an Ankh kind of opportunity to play with the gods actually into play. But really what this game comes down to is building a strategy for victory points and military success throughout the game through those tiles. Those tiles are next level. Building up those pyramids to access more and more tiles. What a brilliant idea. What a fun idea. Kemet, Blood and Sand.
Oh, yes. I totally agree, and we'll be talking about this in a future week.
Oh, I love it.
Love it. All right. Next up for me is number 34, another second edition. Oh, I'm doing it. It's happening. I love how at first you're like, what's your theme? And I'm like, oh, I don't know. And I'm like,
second edition. What's your theme?
For 2 seconds. I'm like, they're all the same.
They're all the same thing.
This is PAX Premier second edition. Came out in 2019 and is the re-implementation of, you guessed it, PAX Premier. But this version is released by Cole Worley from Whirligig Games. So we got the rights back and kind of did a lot of work on it to refine it and update it and self-publish. Whereas before it come out from Sierra Madre Games. So in PAX Premier, you're doing a lot of things. I'm not going to go into all the details of the game because it'll take too long. But it is an area control type of game, right? You are trying to gain control of different locations and areas on this map, this very simplified abstract map of Afghanistan. And to do that, you're building a tableau of cards in front of you representing different potential individuals as well as factions of the time from the Great Game, the late 19th century scramble for Afghanistan. So there are the British, there's the Russians, and there are the Afghani people, right? And so you can be aligned with any of these individuals, and you can change your alignment throughout the game, and that's going to determine not only what you're able to do, but how you can score as the game progresses. The scoring in the game is very limited. I've had games where I scored as few as 1 or 2 points, and I've had games where I won with like 6. The scoreboard goes up to 23, but I've never seen anybody go over 20. So it's a very tight, very limited, narrow scope that you're playing through. The game is incredibly smart in terms of, like, it has all the historical elements in there. All the text is there. You can look up who all these people are. And the gameplay reflects the times and the difficulties and challenges of that era and the relationships between these two external superpower forces coming in and meddling in the politics of Afghanistan, which obviously continued for almost 150 years after that. And it's just so interesting. And like, even if you don't care about any of the history or any of that other stuff, which you should, because it's fascinating and has affected the world for decades. But even if you don't, the gameplay itself is just so tight and it's so engaging, right? Like, there are certain things that can only be activated at certain points based on which of the suits is currently in play. There are certain actions that you can take based on which cards were put out and how many stars are available on the suit that is available. Like, how many cards can I have in my tableau right now? Like, well, how many stars do you have in this particular suit right now? So you don't get to manage everything. You can assassinate each other's cards. That's cool. Also mean, but funny. PAX Premier Second Edition somehow manages to feel like a very smart game and also just like a very fun, engaging game at the level of any game that we would play. One of my favorite games, this is the game that made me think like, oh, I really like Root. Oh, I think I just really like Cole Worley and what he's able to do with games as a medium. And it's just fantastic. I'm really glad he went back to the well and redid this one.
It's a fantastic game. And again, like I was talking about Rococo, this is the theme and this is a game that I would not play. I would pass over. And I play it, and I just like, this is fantastic.
Yeah, I remember I brought it. I brought it to play. I'm like, y'all are gonna like this, and everybody at the table, because it was you and like a couple of your friends in Jersey, and I'm like, yeah, no, it's good. It's a good game. Just ignore the theme. It's fine. If you care, that's all really cool, but you don't even have to care. Like, the game is good.
I mean, to be fair, when you put this game on the table, it's like you're putting I don't know, table mat? Like a little...
It's like a little rug.
It's a little tiny... It's not even a thick... It's just like... it's like a paper towel.
Yeah.
You're just like, this, and here, take a couple of, I don't know, pieces of chewing gum of your color.
Like, they look like chalk sticks. They represent units, roads, and walls, depending on how you orient them on the board. Like, it looks ridiculous, and yet at the same time, very elegant. Like, I talked about, like, Osprey Games and their productions and how, like, modern and, like, sophisticated they look.
Mm-hmm.
This looks like one of those. Like, it looks like something you could put on a bookshelf and look smart because of. Thankfully, it's also just really fun, too.
So, yes. Yes, the production... I'm not making fun of the production. The production is brilliant. And it's one of those things where it's like, it's just so smart that it looks dumb.
Mm-hmm.
And then you play it and you're like, oh, okay. I get all of this now.
Right.
And why did I not think of this? Cause it's one of those things where once you play it, and again, when you look at it and you're like, this is going to be fun? ? And it's fun. Why? How? I don't know. And I really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed this game. And I think the first time I won that game, which again, makes no sense.
Yeah, you did. Yeah.
It makes no sense. It's just like, and it's relatively heavy game, but it does not feel heavy.
No.
And I love the idea, like you mentioned, like, I love the idea of exploring different themes and just being educated in a really fun way.
Mm-hmm.
And if I had more of these games as a kid growing up, I would just dive into history and world affairs like right off the start. Just brilliant.
Dude, if this game was 30 minutes shorter, I would make all my students play it all the time. It's so good.
It's surprising. It's a surprising on every level.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, a game that I wanted to talk about was Dwelling of Eldervale. Was going to be my number 34. But one of the things I did specifically with my top 100 list is I had to really honestly come and sit down and be like, look, two things. Can people actually get this game to play? Like, am I recommending something? Is this game honored in our top 100 if no one's getting this? Like, and in some cases on my top 100 list, there are games that are either very difficult to nearly impossible to get. But again, they have risen to the level of they deserve to be on this list despite their scarcity. Andromeda's Edge comes out and you and I just back it, right? We had seen it. We wanted to play it at one of the conventions, could not get any table space to play it, but was super excited because of Dwellings of Eldervale. I still have an incredible amount of love for Dwellings of Eldervale. I still, if given the opportunity, will pick up that game, including the monster bases that make the little monster sounds. Like, I get it. It's dumb. It's stupid. I love it. It's fun. I want the little monster bases that make the sound. It would make me legitimately happy. And I do really enjoy that game a great deal. Andromeda's Edge, again, it's like Gaia Project. It's the new version where they're like, hey, remember those tracks that did nothing but just counted up a particular color? Well, now the tracks do so many things. In fact, with Andromeda's Edge, the tracks do all of the things. Like, you teach the game, you're just basically teaching the tracks that are out there. One of the interesting, innovative, essential ways that Andromeda's Edge kind of like reiterates and just becomes so smart about worker placement is the ships that give you that thematic feel of exploring the universe, exploring Andromeda's Edge and all of the mystery and the danger that comes off of that, allows those different ships to act as, in some cases, a glorified worker placement game.
Yeah. Now,
I'm not saying this in a bad way. I'm saying it's a glorified worker placement game in the best way possible. Because you're exploring space and visiting these different sectors out there. And then as you go out there with your transports, like you would, those transports allow you to build developments, allow you to build space stations out there in the universe. And then your ships all have different abilities. And one of the most fun parts of the game that I think almost everyone overlooks is you get this unique set of random ships that have different abilities alongside with your own special ship that you could put into play, and giving your workers something special and unique that only they can do on the board. So there's a lot of management of, like, I'm sending my ships out to explore. My transports are getting out there, getting resources. Now it's time to kind of move them on to developments. And then the tracks are doing a whole bunch of cool, crazy stuff throughout. The raiders and the different ships that come over from the edge are fun and different and interesting and dynamic and scary in some cases, but still every once in a while defeatable, which is a really great, nice balance. I love the different races that are playable in this game. It adds a lot to the game. There's a lot in this box here. Andromeda's Edge, even if Elders was available out there, Andromeda's Edge is probably the better pick. So my number 34 is Andromeda's Edge.
I agree. As I said about 45 minutes ago.
But mine is higher.
It is higher. Yeah.
Just by a little bit.
Yeah. No, you're right. You're right.
I'm right by 1 or 2 points.
Yeah, exactly.
That's it.
Well, I'm going to talk about something that you also picked that mine is higher. So there you go.
Sheffield.
Yes, I did it. So you had this game at 64. For me, it's number 33, Star Wars The Deck Building. Yeah.
Just remember who introduced you to that game.
I do.
It was I.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
This guy.
Yeah. You did it.
I did a thing.
This is like the one on the list that isn't really directly based on anything, except it is kind of a ripoff of Star Realms. So
it is a second edition in a way.
Yeah, right. In the sense that you can't copyright game mechanisms.
Oh, poor Star Realms. You did so much good for our industry. Let me tell you.
I know. You should have gotten that Star Wars license, guys. or Star Trek or anything.
You're getting it eventually.
Yep. So Star Wars, the deck building game, you talked about it at length a couple weeks ago, so I'm not going to go into the mechanics here, but it's Star Realms with Star Wars.
Yeah.
You're facing off against each other, Rebel versus Empire, or with the current new version that just came out, you can play as the Separatists versus the Republic. And you are building up your deck. And the thing that I love the most about this game, because everything else is more or less the same, you have a row of cards that you can buy from. Then you fight each other. You're trying to destroy the opponent's bases. But the thing I really like about this is that you can interact with that center row, right? So you can capture or destroy or bounty hunt or whatever the words are, depending on what faction you are, the cards out of that center row. If you can't do something else, you're like, okay, I can just make sure you don't get this card. And that's a really cool way to be able to interact with each other. Because in Star Realms, some of the challenge sometimes, you look at the center row and you're like, that card's really good for you. I can't get it. That's bad, right? You're going to get it next round, and it's going to suck for me. So if you're like, I don't want you to have Luke Skywalker. All right, well, I'm going to take Luke Skywalker out of the, you're not going to have that option. It plays really quickly. I love how you get to choose from the different bases and have that kind of flexibility of, like, this one's really powerful, but it has less hit points, so it's a little more dangerous for me to play it, but I get really cool ability when I play it out. I just wish they would, it's great that there's a second set for this.
Mm-hmm.
I would have loved an actual just expansion for this. There's room in the box and there's room in the deck. And again, Star Realms has like 50 expansions, so we know you can do it. Give us an expansion. Give us a campaign mode. That'd be great. So, but on its own, even Star Wars, a deck building game, it gets played a whole bunch in my house. Fantastic.
It's a great game. It really is. And the opportunity to destroy other cards or capture other cards that are in that particular market row. So smart, so brilliant, so much fun. And it really just allows you to have more things to do.
Yep.
When that market row in Star Realms or any other game just kind of like, and I can't do anything.
Right.
Or it's just going to make my deck worse.
Yeah.
And you feel so defeated at that point. And there's such good games out there, the different Star Realm games or any game that has a market. I'm talking to you, Dune Imperium, when you have, I can't do
it. Stop making it bigger.
Stop. So you can actually attack and get rid of or recruit some of those mercenaries out there. So brilliant, brilliant idea. Fairly inexpensive game for the cost too.
Yep.
So that's always appreciated. very much appreciate it. Thank you so much for not killing us on an IP game.
Yeah.
All right, Anthony, my number 33 is a game that you know and love. This is The Voyages of Marco Polo from 2015. I've been talking about the essentialness of certain mechanics in these games that they kind of like, they own it. The Voyages of Marco Polo can or should be able to do two things, right? Contract completion and travel. A little light on the travel side, but that's for Marco Polo 2 to talk about a little bit more. But it does do travel. The dice in this game is really fun, rolling the dice to see what actions and abilities you have available to you to allow you to get resources from the market to travel all of these distant lands. Marco Polo's out there journeying through China, crossing the Silk Road. It packs a lot of punch for worker placement by utilizing the dice that go out there on the board, by utilizing probably the most interesting dynamic single special player power in any game. Like, you can get player powers in almost any game out there. When you get a player power in Marco Polo, you're like, broken. This game is broken, man.
Literally broken. Every time. Yeah. And when you play for somebody with the first time you play with someone, they're always like, is this right? And you're like, yeah, that's right. And they're like, are you sure? I'm like, yeah. They're like, I'm going to win. You're like, no, you're not.
I mean, there's Simone Luciani and Danielle Ticini. Like, they just know this. They just know how to do this. The math, however they math this game out, bravo, boys. Bravo. Because the dice that go out on the board, you get low dice. They can be modified. They can be mitigated. They get out there on the board. And the contract completion is fun and fast and fluid. Just a lot of great opportunities for a lot of great placement here. The Voyages of Marco Polo, 2015.
Yes, wonderful game. So wonderful, I will talk about it later.
I knew it!
Yeah, you did. All right, next up for me, number 32, a game that came out in 2020 in the heart of us sitting in our own homes, not playing with other people. Lost Ruins of Arnak. This game jumped into my top 100 immediately. Like, I played it maybe 3-4 weeks before we did our list in 2020.
Mm-hmm.
I love this game. In fact, I just played it last night.
You sure it's not Dune Imperium? Because I hear they're the same game.
Yeah, that's what people said. And eventually I was like, no, they're not.
They're not.
Not at all.
Stop doing that.
Yeah, they have one thing in common, which is a big thing, but also not really.
It's sure.
So it is a worker placement / deck building game. You have a certain number of workers. You are placing them out on the board to take actions. You're also building a deck with which to do various things. The cards will help you place things out. That's the thing that the two games have in common, right? And you only have two workers. So really, like, 80% of what you're doing, and towards the end of the game, like, 95% of what you're doing has nothing to do with those two workers. Those workers are just a way to access some pretty powerful sites, get resources early in the game, build up your engine as you get going. But ultimately, what you're trying to do is explore the jungle. Right, you're going out, you're trying to find various treasures and explore, get deeper into the temple. It's an Indiana Jones game, right? If you're going out, you're trying to find all these treasures, and the game itself plays so smoothly. I could teach this game in like 10 minutes if somebody has a basic understanding of deck building. I'm like, 10 minute game, it's easy. Your deck, quote unquote, starts with 6 cards. Like, it's not even like a full 10 card deck to start. It's like 6 cards, and they're very simple action wise. Each card has like a location that you can go with it. Like, they have like a boot or a jeep or a boat. Later, you can get airplanes. And that's where you're going to place your workers. But at the end of the day, it's really just a very simple action selection. And then you occasionally place workers out on the map. I really, really enjoy just like how streamlined that is and how you can build up your deck. You have the ability to buy artifacts or items. Items are good for you later. Artifacts are good for you immediately and later. That balance changes throughout the game. Like, the market shifts as the game gets later, where there's more artifacts available and less items because the artifacts are more immediately useful. And you can choose to just focus on that track, go up the way, try to maximize your points on the temple track, or you can choose to try to maximize your points by exploring different sites. And what really makes the game by itself is great. It made it on my top 100 right away. It's a fantastic solo experience, but the expansions have really added a lot of content to it, right? The expedition leaders, where you have asymmetrical powers start the game for each of the different leaders, and they play slightly differently. That's what really makes the game so good. There are multiple solo campaigns for this as well, including a free one that's been available the whole time. I've played this game not the most of anything since 2020, but very close. It's like my third most played game in the last 4 years. Because, again, I played it last night because I'm like, I have an hour and a half before bed. The kids finally went to sleep. I just need my brain to shut off, and this game is good for that. It's great. Lots of ruins for
it. It just didn't make it. It was on the edge of my list, and I'll be honest with you, I don't have a good reason. I don't.
There's too many games. That's the reason.
It certainly should be on my list. It's honestly just there. Like, my ratings on Board Game Geek are rather high for it too.
Yeah.
It's an eight for me on Board Game Geek.
And it's such a like a simple complexity to it. Like, I don't, it's so hard to describe, and I've struggled with this for years, but it just feels right. The game flows the way it should.
Sure. And the expansions are great.
Yeah.
And I love the different asymmetrical player powers that you get. And as the expansions go on, they become more and more diverse. And it's great. It's a great solo game too.
Yeah. It's kind of, I wouldn't say it's taken over from Terraforming Mars. It's like the most played solo game for me, but it's close.
I can
see
that.
It's very close. I play it a lot.
100%. And again, it's smart. It's a great, it's got to come out. I just got to, we're playing this.
Play more. Yeah, play more.
We just got to play it more. All right. My number 32 is a game that I've talked about a lot. And if you listen to the podcast, you know this is my favorite game that I do not own any of it, and it makes no sense, and I talk about it all the time, and I constantly am looking for a sale because I'm like, look, everyone I know owns this, and I've played this game. This is one of my most played games of all time, just because everyone plays it. I love the game, you love the game, Matt Gertz loves the game because he created it. It's Concordia, but this version I'm going to throw in here is Venus from 2018. So it's trading in the Mediterranean, folks, depending on the map that you play, because there's a lot of different maps that come along with this. This is a 2-6 player game that allows you to, I don't know what I can say more that you haven't already said as far as this is concerned, but it is a wonderful trading of resources to allow you to build ports and spots to trade throughout the board. And really, the definitive nature of the mechanics here is the cards that you play, because each of the cards allows you to take an action. So you play the card out there, you take an action, but that's not all. That specific card that you play out to the board allows you to be able to score based upon, again, what card that card happens to be. So as you're building your deck out throughout the game, you're also building out what scoring opportunities you want to focus on. So as you purchase cards from the market, as the game goes on, you are building more and more into that strategy, not only for taking certain actions, but also for building what kind of victory conditions you're looking at. The game is tight throughout, but it's fun throughout. And again, Matt Gertz is just known for just a treasure trove of just amazing games out there. The opportunity to be able to play teams of two, it's so hard to find in any tabletop games out there. But coordinating particular actions, trade routes, building certain sections, building certain resources and not resources out there, just brilliant. It allows for so many different strategies to come into play, especially when you've played Concordia out so much as it is. The special expansions that come into play are great. It's just a fantastic game top to bottom. If you don't own it, please purchase it so I don't have to and I can come play at your house.
Yeah, I love how high this is every time when you like still don't own the game.
I still don't own the game. How does this happen?
I don't know. It's good though. It's funny.
It's a running gag. 11 years in, give or take.
Yep. Someone will send it to you. You're like, oh, now I own
and
it.
Now it's I own funny. It and it breaks the curse.
Yeah. Suddenly you're like, I don't like this game anymore. It's fine.
I think it's also one of those things where, like, if I purchase it, I got to buy all the versions and all the maps of it just because, like, it's that game, right? Like,
yeah.
How do I not own all of the things for it? So,
I did eventually stop looking. Like, I have like 5 maps, and I'm like, sure, I'm not going to play most of these. And I'm sure there's more that have come out, but I stopped looking.
There's that one map where like the rivers are really drawn on very tiny. And
yeah.
I'm just like, you guys hit a wall at this point.
Yeah. It's no good.
Yeah. I also have the app, which is good.
App is good. Yeah. It's a good app.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Concordia is great. It was on my list, I don't know, a couple weeks ago. It was good. all right. My last one this week, number 31, is also a Matt Gaetz game. Right? That's cool that we did that.
Matt Gaetz is like the best, man. We don't talk about Matt Gaetz enough.
Matt Gaetz is awesome. Yeah. So this is my favorite Matt Gaetz game. It is called Antique 2.
Mm.
So this is a game in which you are spreading out over the Mediterranean, surprise, shock and awe. And trying to establish your dominance in various areas. So there are multiple different types of resources on the map, and you are trying to place your tokens there so that you can produce those resources when certain things happen. the first person to get to a certain number of victory points, depending on the number of players, so it can be as few as 7 that you're trying to reach, depending on if you're playing between, it plays from 3 to 6. And that's one of the reasons I love this game so much, is that it's a rondel, so there are a limited number of actions available to you any round, based on where you are in the rondel, and your action is incredibly simple, right? You're producing in a location, you're building in a location, or you're moving. Or occasionally, when you have the resources to do so, you're purchasing an upgrade of some kind. And so your turn should only take, like, 10 seconds. Now, there's always those people who can break that, but it really shouldn't take you that long. And it's very rare that someone else's action will directly impact what you're doing, even though you do interact with each other on the map. So with 6 people, the game flies, right? It's like a lot of 6-player games. You're sitting there, you're taking a nap, you're checking your phone, go to the bathroom, go for a walk. In this one, you might have 2 or 3 minutes between your turns, which is fantastic. So, and this big sprawling map, and the more people on it, the better. So you're going to start in one area of the map, and you're going to spread from there accordingly, and you're trying to take out these different temples, and then ultimately each other, and spread to these different locations, and build up your resources. And it's like, you look at the map, and it looks like a silly little bit of nothing, but the combination of the rondel, and the streamlined nature in which you can take these actions, and the very tight window for victory, like, again, you don't need that many victory points to win this game. It's so good. It's my favorite 6-player game. It's my favorite Matt Gaetz game. I keep it on hand. Anytime I'm going to a game night where I know we're going to have like 6 to 10 people, we might get stuck at that 6th point. I'm like, okay, I'm bringing NTK2, and definitely 2 or 3 people are going to roll their eyes at me at this old game I brought out. But at the end of the day, people generally like it. Like, it takes an hour and a half. So it's great. NTK2, my number 31.
It's another great game that I'm glad you put on the list, because I don't think it gets any attention.
No, it's one of those games that just, and I feel like this is almost all Matt Gaetz games, mm-hmm. Other than Concordia.
Mm-hmm.
They're all very good. Like, you've talked about Imperial before too. Oh, fantastic game.
Yeah.
Just slides under the radar. People don't think about it. And this one is another one of those, especially because they called it NTK2, which is a terrible name.
It does fit your list though.
It does. I know. You know, it's good. I never played the first one. By all accounts, it's the same game, but this one's a little more streamlined, which is what he does. I wish more people played it. I wish it looked a little prettier and more inviting. Sure. It's not, but, you know, it's good.
I've played both. Both are good. Yeah. 2's better. Ian O'Toole needs to hang out with Matt Gaetz and just do some things.
Yeah, it looks like a map that somebody put a bunch of stamps on. It's not pretty, but it's good. It's good. It's Rio Grande, so, you know. Production is whatever, but it's a good game.
All right, my final game here for number 31 from way back in 2012 is Suburbia. Expand your meager little tiny neighborhood into a sprawling suburb to attract the most citizens possible while dealing with your economy, which is constantly up and down, left and right. Anthony, I don't know. Like, I don't know what else to say about Suburbia. I feel like this is certainly one of those games where might be in consideration for the Hall of Fame for next year.
Yeah, probably.
I mean, we've done, I think it was episode 55. I'm just throwing out a random number out there where it was like Suburbia, like all the things Suburbia. I've loved Suburbia since day one. I love the city building. Again, talking about definitive games as far as mechanics are concerned. City building, tableau building. It's Suburbia, right? Like, I mean, you wouldn't think of any other game when it comes to those two things kind of put together. The expansions are great. Being able to build those long sections that kind of connect, wonderful. It just, a lot of paths to victory, a lot of interaction with other players and what they're building throughout. Just a lot of smart details that you have to keep, you know, in mind as you're building. You want your economy to build, you want your population to build, but you don't want population to build too quickly early on, because then your economy can't stand it. And obviously, as you're building, you know, industrial parts of your particular suburbia, you have to be concerned because that might interact poorly with your residential sections. Like, again, this seems like a lot of nuance and just like bureaucratic nightmares. But when you sit down and play it, it's bright, it's beautiful, it's clean. The new super deluxe, fantastical Kickstarter version, even better and brighter and just more colorful and fantastic. But any version will do. Any version of Suburbia is great, especially with the expansions, and just a wonderful, great game from Ted Auspach. Suburbia!
Yeah, yeah, I talked about this last week, my number 47, mm-hmm. and I agree with everything you said. It has been on one of our lists every single time we've done this list, so I think you're right, it's probably up for Hall of Fame status next year. But there's a reason it's always up there. It is fantastic. It's the best city builder game.
I'm trying to, like we talked about, rebuilding Seattle. Again, just Suburbia, man.
it just feels like a city builder. Like, it has that feel, and nothing else has really captured that.
It's true. Sense. All right, everyone. Well, there you go. Our top 40 to number 31. Hopefully you've been enjoying our top 100. Hopefully you'll join us for our next episode, which, of course, no surprise here, number 30 to number 21. So until next time, this is Chris.
Hey, and this is Anthony.
And we'll save you all at the end of the table. Take care, everyone.
Bye.
Mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices. Plus, extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.